From biochemistry labs to volunteer medical clinics abroad, this guest has never shied away from a challenge. After nearly a decade mentoring youth in music and movement, they made the leap into UX design, rapidly ascending to a senior role, this designer now spearheads high-impact projects for major brands. Known for their innovative problem-solving and passion for user advocacy, they've led comprehensive redesigns that dramatically increased customer satisfaction. After forging their own path to design through diverse industries, they now empower aspiring UXers to find creative growth. And today, we have the pleasure of learning from Emily Mazurek, Senior UX and UI Designer at Verum. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you. That intro is amazing. I'm going to copy that and put that in like my LinkedIn bio. That was awesome.
Oh, perfect. I have to ask, how does someone with a background in biochemistry and music end up becoming a UX designer? Was there like a aha moment that made you realize that this career was perfect for you?
So it actually started back when I was in university and I thought I wanted to be a doctor. I was wrong. I really just wanted a career where there was a sense of like satisfaction and achievement. I wanted to prove something to myself, and you know, doctor was kind of like something that I thought that I could achieve, and maybe I could have, but there were some red flags kind of leading into it. And I don't think that ultimately that would have been the best fit for me. And it kind of came down to when I was actually applying for medical school for the third time. And I recognized I was probably going to get a spot, and you would think like overjoyed how many times I've been trying for this. And I was actually having more anxiety that I would get in rather than get rejected. And like, that was like the final straw where it's like, okay, like maybe I should do a little self-discovery here and kind of assess if this is really what I want for the next decade of my life, going back to school and all that. So I actually went to career counseling, and that was extremely valuable for me. Did some self-discovery and ultimately kind of figured out what I need in a role to feel fulfilled. And the first one I already touched on was achievement. But the second one was actually work-life balance. And I think I don't have to elaborate on that too much, how that probably wouldn't have been the best fit. So after kind of doing that, I kind of spit out with the top three careers that could be a good fit, and web designer came up as one. And I kind of heard a little bit about UX, and the more I looked into it, I was like, oh, you know, this actually really plays to my strength. You know, I'm a scientist by my trade and my background, but I also have this creative problem solving component to it. I was working in hospitality for like over a decade, and that was my favorite part. You know, you meet people, you talk to them, and everybody that comes in essentially has a problem. You know, there's a dietary restriction. They want to sit over there. They have to be out in half an hour. You know, it's my job to solve those problems. And I love that, but I just wanted something that was a little less fleeting and a bit more impactful. So it kind of all came together with UX design. And I was like, great, there's this data-driven analytical approach that really plays to my strengths, but also this creative and people-focused side to it. So I was kind of ready, to dive in right from there.
So walk us through a day in the life of Emily. Like, what's the first thing you do when you get to work in the morning?
So I generally work remotely, which I love, really helps with my work-life balance. And it's something that was super important to me when I was kind of looking for a new role. So I wake up, I walk down the hall, I go to my office, everything that I need is in there. And I kind of get to have a pretty flexible day. I have like a stand-up generally, maybe one or two meetings, but the rest of the time is kind of for me, for how I see fit and, the tasks that I need to complete during the day. So right now we're setting up some user interviews. So organizing questions from that, looking at past interviews, pulling insights to kind of organize that. Also working on some designs right now for a feature that we'd like to user test, things like that. So it's fairly flexible. No day to day is the same. And generally I'm at home with the exception on Wednesdays when I go in person and we meet my team.
So when you were coming into the industry, what was the biggest misconception you had about the field when you were just starting out?
I think the biggest misconception was probably that how important the technical skills were, and not to say that they're not important. You know, the more efficient you are in Figma, the easier it is for you day to day. But ultimately, what's considerably more important is the soft skills. And I think that's kind of where my background comes in and becomes a strength of mine. Being able to communicate with people, being able to collaborate together, problem solving, all of those things are significantly more important than how efficient you are with Figma or, those kind of technical skills. And that's really been beneficial to me and something that I think I've carried through and, tried to use as a strength day to day.
For those who are just coming into the industry, so young designers, what are some I think what's the number one mistake you see young designers make, and how would you help them improve?
I think generally there's not a super clear defined path to becoming a user experience designer. And I actually think that's great because you meet so many people with diverse backgrounds and diverse skill sets. And I think something that a lot of people do, and I initially did this too, you know, you compare yourselves to other people. When I was in boot camp, there were so many graphic designers, and looking at the work that they were putting out, I was like, I'm not up to that level. I'm not even close. Like, you know, you kind of start to feel like maybe you're not good enough. But if you look at your past and all of your relevant experience, and I think a lot of people discount their past as relevant experience. And that kind of became my biggest selling feature. You know, I was a scientist. I was analytically minded. And that's what kind of set me apart from other candidates that were applying. You know, my first position, they wanted somebody that was comfortable running experiments. So they picked me over somebody that actually had 4 or 5 years of experience, which is kind of mind-blowing to think about. But it's really critical that as a, you know, an aspiring or junior designer, that you take the time to kind of think about your past and what are those skills that you have that are relevant to UX. And it's really important to highlight those, because if you don't do that, your future employer, the recruiter, they're not going to do that for you, and they won't make that connection.
I agree. And then what's one huge trend that you see on the horizon that not enough people are paying attention to as yet? And why are you excited about it?
A big trend. I don't know that I'm like super following trends like as closely. Like I see a lot of trends like on LinkedIn about things that people are posting. But I probably go back to like storytelling. I don't know if that's a trend necessarily, but I try to follow that like as closely as possible. And I think that's something that people often miss, especially as like a junior designer, is, you know, really emphasize the story. What is the problem you're trying to solve? What are the goals you're trying to achieve? And how does the work that you do have impact? That's the biggest way you can get people to buy into the work you're doing and get excited about it. So I don't know if that really answers the question, if that's a trend. But I always go back to that, you know, people see things like AI is like, you know, it's really trendy and it's popular to talk about, but it doesn't really influence my work as much as just, you know, kind of sticking to the basics and following, you know, tried and true things like storytelling.
I agree that that connection, that human connection always comes through with storytelling to when you effectively convey, you know, your thoughts. It's very powerful. And I think like you're right. Like not enough people focus on like really good storytelling. So with that said, like, what's your best advice for dealing with, say, difficult stakeholders? I think storytelling could also help here as well, but yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of boils down back to those things that I've already mentioned, like soft skills, and storytelling really comes in here as well. So getting people engaged and excited about the work that you're doing, you know, checking in regularly and having clear expectations aligned from the beginning. Should never really be in a position where you get to the end of your work, you're presenting it and people are confused or not on board. You can avoid that, you know, by checking in regularly and legitimately just communicating with people, getting their input and making sure that they feel involved in the process. Really, you know, easier said than done sometimes, but it's a skill that you can practice and get better at. And storytelling really comes in here as well. You know, give people the reason why this is important to do, you know, explain the goal and give context every time you're sharing your work. And then ultimately, you know, it's your job to show that you have that impact right from the very beginning. You should have metrics and, you know, success standards set up so that you have a metric to prove against once you're done your work, and really show like, this is what we've done. This is how we know we've had impact. And this is why, you know, we can say that we've done the work that we did and we're excited about it.
Yes. Give us your 2-minute UX design philosophy if you had to boil it down to the very core principles.
The very core principles. Well, I mean, like pulling from my background, I'm always going to go back to like research. That's always something that's been interesting to me and something that I pull on as a strength of mine. You know, talking to people and really getting to the root of the problem. You know, why are we doing this? Why is this the best solution? Why do we think that we should go in this direction over this direction? You know, and having answers for that is super important. And that kind of comes down to the research. So talking to the user, you know, having a good set of questions, you know, pulling from analytics, that doesn't always give the why, but it can give you an indication of where to look and trends that might be happening. I think that's super important. And then working together with your team and collaborating, I'm not always going to have the best idea. Generally, I'm never going to have the best idea right off the bat. And it doesn't, you know, get to that better stage until I'm actually chatting with people, other input, and kind of incorporating that all together. So I think it has to be collaborative, and it has to, you know, ultimately go back to the user. Why are you doing this?
And every designer has faced, I would say, a tough decision critique at some point. Walk us through a critique experience that you found, I would say, challenging, and how you handled it.
One of my previous roles, it was critical that I would always have three different variations of a design. And then we would go into a critique and there would be three rounds, you know, with the internal team, then with the pod, and then with the external team, with any other stakeholders. So maybe the sales team, or that could be the marketing team or whatnot. Sometimes those meetings would get up to like 15 or 20 people and everybody wants to have their opinion heard. And when you're presenting three separate designs, it can be really easy to fall into the trap of people are kind of voting for what they think rather than, you know, the designers kind of taking ownership and saying, I think this is the best design because of this. And it can start to get a little bit blurry there. So I think it's really important to have those clear goals outlined at the beginning, specifically in meetings that are kind of that size, so that everybody understands, you know, why are we picking this design? It's not because I like the look of A over B or C feels really great. You know, the ultimate reason is for the user and for this specific goal that we're trying to achieve. And that's why we should be picking one of these designs. So again, trying to find that balance and really just be critical about why we're doing what we're doing.
So imagine it's 2030, right? And what does the world of UX design look like? How do you see the future for UX and UI panning out over the next decade or so?
Well, it's still growing, and a lot more companies you see kind of integrating these roles. You know, UX design is not something that was very common that you saw even 10 years ago, you know, really ingrained in different companies. And you see it from everything from like pet companies to, you know, like grocery stores. Like, it's becoming very spread out across so many different types of industries. And I think that's awesome, because if we're leading with the design mindset and always prioritizing the user, it's not only better for the user experience, but it's also generally better for the business as well, because you're not going to be solving the wrong problems. So I think in 10 years from now, we're going to be seeing this even more widespread in industries that don't have this already. And I hope that it just becomes kind of more ingrained and more less of like a specialty or something that's a nice to have, and more of like a core component of like any kind of thriving company.
And I ask everyone this question who comes on the podcast. This is my last question. What's one weakness that you've turned into your strength?
So basically, like, it's my background, and I kind of already talked on this as well. You know, I was coming into this not as a designer by trade, as a scientist. I didn't really feel like I was necessarily qualified, but I suppose especially after doing a boot camp, that's how I was, you know, trained as a designer initially, right? 12-week boot camp, full-time, you know, realistically, like, great jumping off block, but how much can you learn to be like ready to jump into that role in 12 weeks? I recognize that. Now, we don't want to portray that, because, you know, if you don't have confidence in yourself, neither is your potential employer, right? So for me, it was really important to, again, kind of fall back on those skills that I had. You know, I worked at the restaurant, so I had those soft skills. I worked at the lab as a researcher. I had those, you know, hard analytical skills, and really bringing those to the forefront became the reason, like I mentioned before, why I was hired over somebody else with legitimate real work experience. So it became the strength and kind of the differentiator for me. And something else that also maybe became a strength for me and a reason that maybe people would know of me more frequently was actually LinkedIn. And that was not something that I ever saw myself posting on or becoming more regular on, but that was advice given to me by a career success advisor at my bootcamp. And I was legitimately pissed off actually when I got that advice. You know, what can I do to stand out and post on LinkedIn? I was like, I can't believe I paid this much money for this course, right? And he was totally right. So that became like a total strength of mine. And it's a great way to kind of practice actually your writing, your storytelling. And it's something I try to do once or twice a week, just to post some thoughts out there. You talk to cool people, you get to meet really interesting people, learn new ideas. It's definitely something that I fall back on more now, not because I'm trying to, you know, impress hiring managers or recruiters, but it's become kind of core to my involvement in the community, and definitely a way that I think I stand out differently compared to other designers is just how I can be involved in that community and how many people that I get to meet because of it.
Emily, I love this conversation. Thanks for joining us on Got 10 Minutes today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. This is great.
And where can our listeners find you if they'd love to connect?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm probably most active there. It's just /Emily Masaryk would be my handle. And then you can also find me on my website, where I'm offering consulting and mentoring services at www.dandydesign.ca.
Thanks for listening to the Got 10 Minutes podcast, powered by Samelogic, action-based in-product surveys powered by AI. To stay in touch, please follow us on LinkedIn or the podcast app you're listening to this on right now for more episodes. I'm Dwayne Samuels. Take care.